sight. Caterpillar to a butterfly. Bye, bye, butterfly.
It's Green and Growing with Ashley Frasca.
Plants, flowers, trees, and stuff.
On 95.5 WSB.
Back on the show with your calls and your questions in this last hour and a little bit more about recycling. Earth Day is Monday. I hope you do something fun this weekend. Do a little project with the kids, whether it's recycling or whether it's getting outside birding or not cutting down some flowers that pollinators could be enjoying. Do something nice for Mother Nature, right? I want to go back to Jan in Braselton. We're talking about powdery mildew on the roses. And what was your question about your maple tree, Jan?
I have a maple tree I've had a couple of years now. It was really small, but it's about maybe not quite 3 feet tall now. And I was going to see if there's a fertilizer or something I could give it. Maybe it might need a little boost.
You know, they're not really heavy feeders, in my experience. So I mean, if it's leafing out and it's looking good and the limb structure's okay and the leaves look all right, I don't even think you need to fertilize. Do a little bit of research when you're at the big box store or the nursery. Talk to them about what fertilizer is best. I wouldn't recommend an all-purpose 10-10-10. I think you need to be a little bit more careful with the levels of nitrogen, which is that first number. Be it, you know, a little bit higher or a little bit lower for a Japanese maple. But, you know, if you insist on doing it, I would. But you may not even need to. As long as it's leafing out and it looks healthy, you might be okay.
Well, it looks good, so I'm going to leave it alone then.
Yeah. Again, like, I love this answer. Less is more sometimes. You know, it really is. And
right,
I think that's
right.
Our knee-jerk reaction. Well, it must be sick or something looks like it's in decline and I want to fertilize it. And sometimes, you know, as long as they're planted in the right soil and they're cared for and happy, right plant, right place kind of deal, then usually you're fine.
Yeah, I just didn't want to neglect it, in other words.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean,
but it looks good.
Yeah, and proper pruning along the way. You know, there's not really much else to do. Thank goodness they're pretty hardy and tolerant when it comes to any diseases and insects and things like that. But proper pruning can make a difference, too. And they don't even all necessarily need to be pruned. But I told someone the other day, there are occasions when you can prune any time of year. So you don't have to wait until, oh, it has to be late winter, or, oh, it has to be after it blooms. But when you're looking at the health of a Japanese maple, something that'll help it along, always remove, number one, dead limbs, right? Dead limbs don't benefit any plant at any time ever. So there's always 12 months out of the year when you can cut those. The second would be dead or diseased limbs, you know, ones that you know are going to become a problem, or they're dying or they're diseased. And number three would be branches that are crossing, limbs that are crossing, and you'll see that they could wear the bark on one another from rubbing up against one another. And that's just also inhibiting sunlight from getting through. So crossing branches, you can always take out the weaker of the two that are crossing. So keeping up with that kind of thing would probably help, you know, with the help of the maple as well. Thank you so much for the call. Up next is Marge calling from out in Douglas County. Hey, Marge, good morning.
Good morning.
What's going on?
Well, I've got a problem with my Christmas cactus. I've had those for years and years and never had any problem. But now I have one that the tips are falling off, just, you know, at the joints. And I don't know, I've done anything different. I don't know what's going on.
Okay, so is this where the buds are, or actual pieces of the cactus are dropping off?
There's, of course, no buds. Yeah, it's just the pieces of cactus, you know, kind of at the little joints or whatever you call them.
Yeah, well, that's troublesome. My first thought would be too much moisture. My first thought would be that if they're getting a little weak because they're getting a little soggy. So you don't overwater the thing, do you?
No, I usually sometimes a couple weeks before I, you know, water them, you know, so I haven't. I've had it for quite a while, but all of a sudden it just seemed like I really don't think I did anything different.
and subtle little things, too, like moving it, you know, from a bright, sunny area that it loves to something that's a little bit dimmer could actually put, you know, undue stress on it.
No, I haven't moved it at all.
Okay.
I leave it in the kitchen all winter, and then, of course, I put out aside in the summer, but it's been the same place all winter.
Yeah, and it's not getting any draft or anything from a vent?
No.
Okay. And then my thought too, maybe it is time to go ahead and start to introduce it to the outdoors like you do every year. And
yeah.
I know you know what to do, but for others who are not familiar with that, whether you're bringing a houseplant outside or Christmas cactus, which loves it, please do that. Your Meyer lemon, whatever.
I already did. I put it outside now.
Good. Yeah. So for anybody who's not gone through that process, don't just go stick it out on the deck or patio in the bright sun and go, okay, here's some sun. Like, introduce it slowly, you know, put it in bright light where it gets a little bit of the shade of the house or whatever, then slowly start inching it out, then into full sun. So it sounds like you've done that before. You know exactly. Just lay off the watering for a little bit. Now that it's outside, it's going to demand a little more water because it's going to be hotter. I've not heard of that, though. And what you could maybe do, if they're still, you know, supple, if the pieces that are falling off are still, they're not soggy and rotted, I would go ahead and start putting them in pots. I would go ahead and start taking those pieces and putting them in pots and see if you can't get them to root. I'm sorry, that's really... My only thought for that would be too much moisture. But otherwise, with the habit of bringing it in and out, caring for it, bright, sunny kitchen window, you're doing all the right things for the Christmas cactus. So thank you so much for the call. Good luck. Good luck. Next, we go out the other side of I-20 and talk to Chris in Conyers. Hey, Chris, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm great. What's going on?
Well, I just purchased a Alamanda bush or something like that. I don't know. And I was just wondering, how do I plant that? Something new to me. I thought it was a tree, but when I got home, I realized it was a bush. So I don't know how to plant it.
Now, I don't recognize the name of what you're saying. Do you know how to spell it, or what does it look like?
I think it's Alamanda bush.
I honestly don't know what that is. Where did you see it, or what?
Alamanda.
Okay.
I got it from Lowe's. I purchased it from Lowe's.
Oh, okay. And it's just something you bought because you liked the look of it?
Yes.
Okay, so what I'm seeing on my friend Google over here, so it's a tropical plant. Oh, is it
It's yellow.
Yeah, okay, so that is going to be, yeah, kind of like a shrub, but it could also be a vine, I think.
Okay.
It looks a lot like my Carolina jessamine. That's crazy. It's got little yellow flowers?
Yes.
Huh. Okay. Well, in that case, I kind of have an idea just of what it is, a tropical flowering thing. Plant it in soil that you make sure is well draining. So, you know, dig that area up real well, disturb the dirt, dig a hole, make sure that you plant it up just a little bit. Don't dig the hole too deep. That way, if it's up raised just a little bit, that water is going to roll off and not, you know, rot the roots or anything like that. Make sure it gets full sun. But there's no special anything, Chris, you need to do to the soil. No amendments or anything like that. Just put it in the Georgia red clay or whatever soil you've got. But break it up really, really good. Make sure there's no big chunks of red clay. And make sure it gets full sun. You should be okay. And water as you plant it. Water it right after. I mean, if you've got something that could be nearby to support it, if it is going to start to have a little bit of more of a vining habit up against a pergola or a post that you wouldn't mind it growing up, or if you want to put a trellis up behind it, like a wire trellis behind it, that way it's got a little bit of support, I think it's going to do good in full sun.
It makes a lot of sense. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you are so welcome. I'm really glad you introduced me to a new plant because I had no idea what that was, and I see... When you Google Alamanda, a lot of nurseries in Florida come up. So maybe call me back, Chris, when it starts to get cold, because we'll make sure that we're on the same page and we may need to protect it from some of the harsher days in the wintertime. But if it's in the family, or I'll have to do a little more research about like my Carolina jessamine, the flower looks really, really similar. It's probably going to be hardy to our area. We're getting a little warmer here in North Georgia and a little more tolerant of some cold weather. So I think it might be okay. But yeah, call me back. We'll make sure we protect it when it gets cold for sure. Thanks for the call. Frank in East Atlanta. Good morning, Frank. What's going on?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
We have a kefir pear tree that every year is loaded with pears. But we never get a one because the squirrels eat every last one.
Mm.
Any ideas what we could do?
What I've seen done, aside from, you know, obnoxious wires and cages and all of that protecting the entire tree, which is kind of crazy, what I've seen done, and I can't speak to this from experience, Frank. I know my limits, and home orchards is one I cannot do. Getting those sachet bags, like from an arts and crafts store, like where you'd put potpourri, you know, it's kind of a mesh bag. I have seen that done, and that's time consuming. And there's actually stuff on Amazon that is probably a little bit better material, a little bit breathable, that's made exactly for this. But as soon as you start to get that fruit, you go around the tree and put these bags around the fruit. And I have read rave reviews and heard that it's really good at deterring squirrels and things like that. So that is probably tedious. And I know some are higher up than you can even reach. But that's one of the suggestions I have. I would love to know if anybody listening has some other advice of keeping the squirrels away. I mean, I've got a BB gun, but I can't say that on the radio.
Yeah, well, me too, and I can't say that on the radio, but I don't have all day to.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, we have all this time to just sit out there and watch the squirrels.
So what is inside these little bags?
They're empty.
I mean,
they're empty, so it's a little sachet bag with, like, a cinch top, whether it's ribbons or some kind of wire that's going to cinch the top of it closed. So as you put the fruit or put the bag up around the fruit, you're going to be able to cinch it back at the branch. And that way it stays on there and the fruit, you know, is going to be able to grow into that bag. And then you're able to harvest it, you know, remove the bag, cut it off, whatever. And the squirrels.
Oh, I get you. That's a pretty good idea.
It is a good idea. But like I said, it's tedious. I mean, that's the only reason I hate to give you that answer. But I mean, as long as you could at least reach, you know, some within your reach and make sure, you know, you can go around and wrap a dozen, two dozen and be guaranteed at least 24 pairs if you're able to do that.
Yeah, because we want to make pear preserves. We don't eat them. We just like to make the preserves, and it's been an impossible task. So we'll give that a shot. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'd have to do it. I can't reach my computer right now. But if you look on Amazon, if you start with sachet bags and then kind of go down the rabbit hole of searching on Amazon, they may actually have a specific name, like fruit bag or something, kind of start to see where that gets you. Deborah Green, who works here at the radio station and is a producer for the Mark Arum Show, and she's also over on our sister station, The River. She's a DJ over there. I gave her pears that someone gave me for Christmas one year, and I'm like, I don't eat pears. What am I going to do with these? She's like, I'm going to make you some pear empanadas. And I said, okay, deal. That was the best thing I've ever had. Like, so now I am not going to eat a pear any other way. I'm like, Deborah, if I get more pears, will you make more empanadas? And she so enjoys it. She so loves it. So, Frank, if you get tired of the preserves, try some pear empanadas. 404-872-0750. Recycling when we come back on WSB.
We hope you'll join us all week on Atlanta's Morning News, starting Monday at 5 a.m.
With triple team traffic every 6 minutes to help your commute.
Now back to Ashley Frasca and her great gardening advice on 95.5 WSB.
Atlanta's News and Talk.
An update on the weekend weather brought to you by Findlay Roofing. 80 degrees today, dry for the most part, but rain moving in the overnight hours, cooling it off to a low or a high tomorrow in the low 60s. So a lot of you recycle. We want to do our best, but glass gives us a little bit of a headache, a little bit of a worry. I took a field trip to the Cherokee County Recycle Center a couple of years ago. Take a listen to this. You may learn a little something. And once it gets broken, yeah, it's repurposed. So gardeners are interested in it, and artsy, craftsy folks are interested in it. I want you to learn a little more from my conversation with Cherokee County Recycling Center Manager Troy Brzee. Troy, thank you for doing the demonstration for me. I just saw four bottles go through the...
glass pulverizer.
Not to be nosy, but how much did this thing cost?
A machine like this runs roughly $18,000. Based on what the county was spending to have glass hauled off, we will basically pay for this machine within 2 years.
County residents only can bring glass recycling here and where else?
Our Hobgood Park location.
And I was afraid to ask. I don't want to put a spaghetti jar in this thing. Do I have to be certified to use it?
No. There are some instructions that need to be adhered to when you're operating it, but it's a very easy machine to work with. It's broken by impact. The glass is broken down and it's essentially pulverized. It then drops into a trommel with two different size diameter screens. As the glass passes over the screens, material that is a particular size will fall through. And if it doesn't fit, it just keeps traveling to the end where it's dropped in as trash.
And what are the uses for that glass once it's all put through the machine?
The county plans on using the glass to help with roadbed. They're going to be using it in drainage ditches. The sand that's produced is going to be used pretty much anywhere where sand needs to be used, with the exception, of course, that's not playground quality sand. Mixing in concrete for building projects or in areas where they need fill.
the expectation for this machine, like you said, was to do things maybe that the DOT or the county, you know, byproducts that the DOT or the county would use. And you told me off mic, what was a pleasant surprise that you found that people actually have a use for some of this glass that's ground down?
It's pretty stuff. It's very decorative. We've had a lot of folks who are interested in it to use as ground cover in their gardens. We've had folks who are using it decoratively in vases for display inside. So it's craft folks love this stuff. At this time, we're just building up a stockpile. For the most part, if somebody's interested in it, all they need to do is come to the office during business hours. And if they want a scoop of it, they're more than happy to give them some.
It's not shards of glass. It's not sharp. It is super decorative. Looks pretty rounded off. Pretty safe.
Oh, yeah. And you'll see when we go out here, I'll actually pick it up and rub it between my hands. Yeah, it's very friendly.
For the time being, is there any shortage of glass? Are you finding that you have more than enough to eventually be on track to maybe make money back on this?
It's actually reducing costs for the county. Down the road, if there's a revenue stream potential, we'll look at that.
What all was involved without getting in the muck and the mire, but, you know, county politics or on any level, really. This machine cost $18,000. So what was kind of the give and take of the argument as to why this would benefit the county and its citizens?
We rely on a third-party vendor to do our hauling. We would fill up large containers with glass, and the vendor would then haul it to a processing facility. Due to the pandemic and manpower shortages, that vendor lost a lot of their drivers. Well, in the meantime, the glass didn't stop coming in, but now I've got containers that are full and no place to put them. So it was because of that outside vendor, really, we started looking at other avenues. How can we do away with this third entity in dealing with our glass processing? And doing some research, we found this machine, and basically the machine itself allows us to process it, and we do our own hauling, so it's all self-contained within the county. We don't rely on anybody else.
And as far as you know, are there any other counties in Metro Atlanta that have anything like this?
In my research with the machine, I'm in close contact with our neighboring county, Pickens County, and when I showed it to them, they ended up purchasing one as well, so they've got one operating in Pickens County also.
I know it's maybe only been in use, what, a month, maybe a little over a month, but what's been the reaction as far as, you know, you have to take a few extra steps before folks just throw their glass in a container?
So far, it's great. The biggest thing is folks are glad to see that it's being used, it's being recycled and not just tossed in the landfill. And I think that's ultimately what everybody's striving for, is they want to know that their efforts aren't for nothing.
Makes them feel good.
Exactly.
The first time I came here myself as a Cherokee County resident and brought my glass, I had a couple of spaghetti jars that were dirty. They had metal caps on them. I had maybe a wine bottle that still had the cork in it. Tell me what process we go through before we get to throw it in the bin.
First and foremost, all the glass has to be food grade glass. Any glass that you purchase from the store that has food or drink in it. We ask that all liquids be removed, the glass be cleaned. As far as lids, we don't like the big metal lids. The machine doesn't like the big metal lids. Every once in a while one slips through. For the most part, it handles lids and labels just fine. Anything that's put in for processing that doesn't meet those standards, unfortunately, we have to trash it.
Troy, what are we looking at as far as tons of recycling material donated by the residents of Cherokee County within the last year?
Within the last year, just glass alone, the county processed 331 tons of glass.
That's cool, and that number has now been updated to about 450 tons a year in Cherokee County. Thanks, Troy, for that update. So check with your county offices how they handle glass recycling. I'm going to put a video up on Facebook and some links for you to follow. 404-872-0750. We'll be right back.
It's Green and Growing with Ashley Frasca.
Plants, flowers, trees, and stuff.
On 95.5 WSB.
All right, with the Earth Day theme, want to share more about recycling. You heard my story there with the Cherokee County Recycling Center Center Manager, Troy Brezzi, who's a good friend of mine. I see him all the time when I'm over on the Blaylock Road facility, and I shared a fun video of how this glass pulverizer machine works on the Facebook page. So do like or follow the Facebook page. Just search Green and Growing WSB on Facebook. I try to put some useful things there for you. And so to another friend of mine, Tad Lemire, who is part of the Tad, Drex, and Kara morning show on B98.5, which is a sister station of ours. We're in the same building. We're all very good friends and colleagues on 97.1 The River, KISS 104, B98, and of course here at WSB. And he was like, Ashley, you know about this garden stuff and recycling with Earth Day. I want to do a story about it. Could you recommend anybody? And I said, yeah, a couple of years ago, I interviewed the executive director of Live Thrive, Peggy Whitlow Radcliffe, and she created Charm. And you'll hear all about it and how neat this is to have in the city of Atlanta off of Hill Street. But there are more locations coming. If you're a big recycler like me, take a listen to Tad's story.
Talking to Peggy Whitlow Radcliffe. She's the executive director of Live Thrive Zero Waste Center and CHARM, the Center for Hard to Recycle Materials.
We're in Grant Park, Chosewood Park area, and it's 9 years. This is actually our ninth birthday in April, which is amazing. I never thought the response would be as great as it is. And setting up, we've grown. Now we take over 100 different materials, single stream items, as well as the hard to recycle things. Because there's so many people in the city of Atlanta that don't have access to curbside or single stream recycling, multifamily homes, look at how many we have, that may not have infrastructure. They're older units and they don't have it. So having a place like CHARM to be able to bring the materials has been obviously an asset to the municipality.
It takes so much effort on everybody's part. And it concerns me because I feel like people, you mentioned global warming, it's become politicized, or you mentioned just the environment in general, and they call you a tree hugger, and we're just ignoring it. I remember in college, an environmental expert, I don't know if you've ever heard of Helen Caldicott, came, and at that time, she told us in the early 90s that we had 10 years to save the planet. But that was over 30 years ago.
Right.
Are we in a better spot now than we were in the 90s, or is it still as messy as I imagine?
I think things are, we're making strides, efforts, because so many manufacturers are being forced to. Also, so many large corporations, even here in the city of Atlanta, have sustainability reports, and they're all, to be on Forbes 500 list, you have to have a sustainability report. So they're all making efforts in greenhouse gases, and climate change, to really try to make a difference. Education is the key with this. The facility is incredible, and I'm glad that we have the traffic we have. But without the knowledge, why would you care? If you really think this is not affecting my life, going from your statement about tree hugger, that was something my friends were calling me, you're just a tree hugger. It's so much more about the economy. Georgia is number 2 in the nation for remanufacturing recycled material. When I heard that statement 10 years ago, I thought, there's no way. We can't do curbside recycling. How in the world is it possible we're number 2 in the nation? There's 120 manufacturers at this point in time that depend on recycled material to make new material. That's something that the public doesn't know. Knowing that we're supporting our own economy, recycling is circular economy. Mm-hmm. You know, when we come through, and the example is Coke created Dasani bottle this morning. This afternoon, it goes to Dalton, Georgia to make carpet. After the carpet, you're finished with the carpet can be recycled, but usually the backing is multiple types of plastic. That goes to LaGrange, Georgia to make car parts for Kia. So we have stayed within Georgia, and this bottle has gone around the planet. Coke is trying to do right now every bottle they produce to capture it back to make new bottles. Novelis, the largest aluminum can maker in the world, is right here.
Mm-hmm.
How smart are they? They have, you know, a customer of Coke, but aluminum is the most recyclable metal there is. So those are just several examples of the material that are curbside recycling items, that there is a manufacturer, that there is value. Curbside can work if people understand what do I need to do to prepare my materials to go into this bin.
And that comes to, like, do you really need to rinse out the empty soup can or peanut butter jar before it goes into the recycling bin?
Yes.
You do?
I'm going to say yes. But, like, water bottles, milk, if you leave the tops on, the tops are still going to be recycled. So if you haven't quite emptied it, it's still okay to pitch it in the bin. We have this Fab Five is what we call it at CHARM. And these are items that in Georgia, they're in demand. It's paper, mixed paper. Mixed paper can be anything from your magazines to your kids' schoolwork or old drawings, office paper, cardboard, aluminum, metal, and plastics 1 and 2. Those are all in great demand within our own state. And this is the key to making it work. If they're clean, if they're dry, and if they're loose. And what I mean by loose is we all love to collect everything, and I included everything in a bag in our house. It just makes it easier. It's cleaner. That's how we do it. Absolutely fine. But when you take your recycling out, open up the bag, dump it into the bin, and reuse that bag.
Ah, the reuse part of it is something that a lot of people forget about, like your old containers that items come in. You could rinse them out and put them in. My stepfather used to do that back in the 70s. Our leftovers would be in a Cool Whip container.
Exactly.
There's nothing more disappointing than opening a Cool Whip container and it contains liver and onions from last night. Disgusting.
That is really disgusting.
That's another thing that he did. Anyway.
That's funny.
You brought up, we were talking about cardboard. What about pizza boxes? If it's got grease on it, you can't recycle it, right?
Not true. Tear off the grease part and just recycle the other. If you compost, the whole thing can go into the compost bin.
Unbelievable.
These are things that people, that's why the education piece is so important. Consistent messaging is really important because I think people just become frustrated that one thing's listed on your municipality's list of what we take, and then does it really get recycled? I think to a point you made earlier about glass. Glass is probably one of the most recyclable materials there are. It's sand, but it can go straight back to be recycled into new glass over and over again. However, when you mix it in single stream, think about every time the truck tips or when they're dumping trash in it,
right.
You hear all the glass breaking. The broken glass is absolutely fine. What is it doing to the cardboard, all those shards of glass into the plastic and the cardboard? That is totally devalued. So what can be captured when it gets to this MRF is it's sprinkling down through the conveyor belts. So it's jamming up the machine, but also how much actually got down.
Right.
Per ton, it's less than 9% is really recaptured. When you put it separately, which when the city of Atlanta started curbside recycling, they had glass in a separate bin. When that's done, it's easy peasy. It goes to Strategic Materials, which is local to Atlanta. And when you bring glass to Charm, within 30 days, it's back on the shelf.
Okay, so my whole life, every city I've lived in that offers recycling at all, you put everything in the same bin, the glass, the cardboard, the plastic. When I moved to DeKalb County, I kept doing that, but then along the way I found out, actually, you're supposed to bring the glass to a separate facility. Is this the reason why? And why doesn't DeKalb County have separate bins for glass? Why would they make us drive to dump our glass? That's too much effort to expect people to do it.
That's very true. DeKalb County is doing their best with it. I'm going to say at least they are having you separate it out so the other material that they're collecting curbside does have value. I know the city of Decatur does have separate bins now, so I think that is something that's going to happen sooner rather than later. But at this point in time, I know that there's a lot of drop-offs like at liquor stores, your package store, when you go to buy, they're saying, okay, bring in your old stuff and new things. I think they're going to try to make it more convenient to be able to drop things off when you're going to purchase new things.
Why doesn't Georgia do the 5-cent deposit? A lot of states do this. You see it on the tops of bottles and cans. It says
bottle
5
bill.
Cents returnable, right?
That's something that when you vote, you really need to look at what these people stand for. It's just something that the legislation has come up multiple times in this state.
And I'm just surprised the rules and the programs are not on a statewide level, that it goes county to county.
Somewhat politics. It's also the haulers. Who are the people that are doing the picking up and taking it to the MRFs, where they're located, how far they have to travel? That's really the considerations with that.
Composting. It's a wonderful thing. We signed up for Compost Now, which is a local organization that actually does this. And I'm not sure if that's a statewide thing or is it just certain counties?
Just certain counties at this point, yeah.
And we were participating in this. And then I talked to my wife about it. She said, well, we pay $35 or something dollars a month. And basically, for every certain number of buckets of waste that you give them, they will give you a bag of compost. Awesome for people who have gardens and want that. What about for those of us who have no use for the composted soil, but we just want to do good? How come it's not free?
It's a cost to them to process it, to purchase.
They pick up the buckets.
Right. They're one of our partners.
Yeah.
We actually partner with them now for a pickup service. And we have them on both of our sites that you can bring it in. If you drop it off at Charm, it's less expensive than having it curbside, which that's an option as well. But it's very costly for the hauling. and then having permits, they make it challenging for composting in the state of Georgia to find property they can actually get permits to do the composting.
If I don't garden and I want to do good, even pay the money, is there a program in place where that compost goes to some nonprofit organization or?
They donate it to local gardeners around the city, around the metro area, actually. You can specifically ask who you want it to be donated to by just contacting Compost Now.
Is there an organization in the area that maybe grows vegetables for people who can't afford fresh produce and that kind of thing?
That's one of the organizations, absolutely. DeKalb County has some. You can go on municipality websites and find those. They're great organizations. Actually, on our new facility, we are going to have a community garden that everything we grow goes back to community.
You're going to be doing that at Charm?
We have a new site in DeKalb County. There's 8 acres, 3 of which are Charm facility will be on. The other 5 will be used for community gardens specifically for this reason.
What a great interview conducted by my friend over at B98.5, Tad Lemire, with Peggy Whitlow Radcliffe, the executive director for Live Thrive. What an interesting conversation and a part that we can all play, sure, in all of this. To find out more, livethrive.org is the website. On my Facebook page, I'll have the link to that, plus links to some of your local counties who handle glass recycling. That's one of the biggest hurdles they talked about. So again, search Facebook Green and Growing WSB. We'll be right back after this.
Did you know you could listen to Green and Growing, Atlantis Morning News, and all your favorite shows on your smart speaker? Tell it to play 95.5 WSB. And we're on.
95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk. Here's Ashley.
Well, it seems that I have closed my internet tab with the weather on it, but I think I have it memorized by now. Brought to you by Findlay Roofing and WSB meteorologist Christine Edwards. Today, we're going to see highs around 80 degrees. Partly cloudy, though. The rain moves in the overnight hours. It's going to be a high of like the low 60s tomorrow and Monday. So certainly bringing a cooling off. Almost a rain out for tomorrow. I want to go out to the phones. Nancy in Hiram has been so patient. Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, how can I help?
We have found a beautiful old-fashioned rose. It's on the very edge of our property. We're not sure. We think that maybe it could possibly be on the road right of way. And we want to transfer it, but we're not sure if it would kill it or not.
I wouldn't do it now because it's taking so much energy right now to put on flowers that we don't want to interrupt that process and disturb the roots and possibly lose some of the root mass as you go to move it. So once it's finished blooming toward the end of summer, like going into fall, that's a much better time to transplant it. Dig the hole wider than deep when you're trying to get all of the root mass out. And in the fall, when you're transplanting it to somewhere else, that's going to be a lot cooler weather, which is going to allow the roots to acclimate to their new spot and the plants kind of shutting down, not having to put out all that energy on flowers and leaves.
Okay. Well, we just want to try and recycle it.
Yeah, see, Nancy's listening to the show, everybody. She's a good student of the show. You know, and if you want
good information.
Thank you. And if you want kind of a better ID on it, if you're on Facebook, look up or even their website, the Greater Atlanta Rose Society. And there may be a spot there on the Facebook page where you could post a picture or like on the website, maybe some submission thing to where you could take a picture of the flowers and they may, one of their experts may be able to identify it for you.
Oh, wonderful. That would be great.
Yep.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you. Yeah, Greater Atlanta Rose Society on Facebook and their website, if you can just Google that. What a great group of folks. I tipped the cap to the North Georgia Camellia Society as well today. And so many master gardeners and groups out there doing plant sales and plant swaps this weekend. Get out and go be social. Go interact with the community this weekend. You've got a good day. Tomorrow's going to be a little rainy. If you're looking for something to do, go on my website, wsbradio.com/greenandgrowing. Scroll down to events, and I've got a lot of fun things for you and the family. Have a great Saturday.